Let me tell you a story.
I think that there's just something about this time of year and the shorter days.
And the funny thing is we keep getting emails that say, don't worry, you were never in danger of blowing up.
Oh, so you're like perfect for this as far as your training is concerned.
Basically, rules are meant to be broken. So that's kind of my coaching.
When the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Yeah, but you can't stay heightened the entire time. If everything's important, nothing's important.
Are you a chaotic whirlwind as well?
What matters is you make a choice and you go with it. And you're consistent with it and honest to it.
Hey there. Welcome to the Nomad Narrator. I am your host, Emily, an award-winning audiobook producer, director, narrator, and general lover of all things audiobook. And I have just gotten home from this week's main event of the audiobook year. It was the 29th annual Audi Awards. So for anyone unfamiliar with that, the Audis are basically the Oscars of audiobooks, and they're presented by the Audio Publishers Association. And this year they were out in Los Angeles, and it was just so fun to be out there and to celebrate with everybody. I was part of the planning committee this year, so it was extra special to kind of get to see everybody's work come to fruition. And being on the planning committee, I also got to see that so much of the work is not even done by the planning committee, but by the staff of the APA. So it just big shout out to them for such an awesome job putting everything together. It went really, really well this year. I also had a lot of fun. I got to teach a workshop over the weekend beforehand. I did a self-care for entrepreneurs workshop for a group of about 20 narrators. That was awesome. I got to meet Sir Patrick Stewart, which was a huge surprise. I got to shake his hand, and he introduced me to his wife, and it was so cool. So it was just a great time. So now I'm home. But while I was out there, one of the people that I got to catch up with was our guest for today's episode, which is The Coach's Corner with Joanna Perrin. So Joanna is a longtime audiobook narrator, director, coach. She's located in NYC, and she and her husband, Johnny Heller, are both very well-known and respected contributors to the industry, not only because of their talents in the booth, but because they also started and continue to operate a lot of different workshops, including the New England Narrators Retreat, which has been just a wonderful experience for so many of us over the years. So today with Joanna, we're going to start with a little chat, and then we'll move into some really cool coaching that she did with a piece that I think we sort of felt left us with more questions than answers. So let's have a listen to that. And without any further ado, I present to you Joanna Perrin.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me now?
Okay, then. I'll,
yeah,
I'll,
yeah, yeah. What?
There's a dog next to you.
I got it.
Sure, don't move.
Oh, my God in heaven.
Is your dog in the studio with you?
Yes, and he'll want to go out in a second.
Yeah.
Go out.
Dear Bye.
God, hi, how are you? Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong for both of us.
Yeah, no worries.
So how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay, except for technical difficulties. I do have a question. Did you get any of these?
Let's see what I've got here. Let me download this one. Okay, now while I'm looking at this and getting this together, we were just emailing before this and we were like, do we still want to do this? We're both very tired today.
Yes.
So, tell me what's going on with you, because I think that there's just something about this time of year and the shorter days. And I did not want to get out of bed. I did not want to do anything.
Actually, I didn't have trouble sleeping because for the first time, they weren't banging through my ceiling at 8 o'clock in the morning today.
Oh, that's right. You have the lovely construction crew keeping you from being blown up by a gas leak.
Well, we've had a gas leak since August, and this building is about close to 400 apartments. So they didn't know where it was coming from. So they turned off the gas in the entire building. And so after 3 days, they narrowed it down to, I guess, three lines in the building. Unluckily, we're one of them. And they've been in our apartment about a dozen times to check the risers and move the stove out and the sink out and everything else out.
What are risers? Do you even know what that means?
No, I have no idea. I think it's got...
they could come in and be like, gotta check the gaskets. And just be like, okay.
They could be putting in cameras for all I know. and audio.
Your apartment is now bugged.
I have no idea. So they check these things called the risers. And then every time they say they've got it all, they say, oh, we have more, and they come back. And so for the last 3 days, they come in every morning, they rip out the whole kitchen, they bang open the walls, and then they're there all day. And then around 5 o'clock, they move everything back. And the funny thing is, we keep getting emails that say, don't worry, you were never in danger of blowing up.
Oh.
Which indicates to me, we were definitely in danger of blowing up.
Now, anyway. How long have you lived in this building?
Oh, years. 15 years at least.
Yeah. And where are you from?
New York. I was born in Manhattan, grew up in Queens and Long Island, and then moved back to Manhattan.
Okay. So you said that you had done casting in the past for TV commercials, film. Did you do theater?
Actually, no. You'd think so, because my degree is in theater. Well, I went to City College. I went to in New York City. I have a degree in theater and a minor in English Lit.
Cool. Wow. So you're like perfect for this as far as your training is concerned.
Supposedly, but
yeah.
You know.
What made you decide to go into those two? Like, did you know when you were going into college that that's what you definitely wanted to do? Or did you kind of feel it out? And
No. I actually started off in journalism. To get a degree in journalism, you also had to go into the English department and study varied things. And one of the things that was on my curriculum was playwriting. For some reason, we studied plays and we had to write by the end of the semester a one-act play. And I got so into it that it got me interested in the theater department. So for a goof, I went to the theater department and I auditioned for something. I got it. A major shock. So it was just some obscure piece, but it got me so interested that I kept the English Lit part as part of my degree. And I went to theater. And by the time it was time to declare, I thought, well, okay, drama, theater, and English Lit. So journalism went by the wayside.
Yeah. Did you ever do anything, since you were interested in journalism, with Augusto Boal? Have you heard of him?
No.
He did Theater of the Oppressed and sort of all of these different ways to engage community in theater for social change. One of them is, and I do not remember if this is the right name, but it's basically like journalism theater.
Huh.
Ooh, I wish I could tell you more about this because I feel like you would like it, but it's so fuzzy in my head. Just a little footnote here. I looked it up afterward. This is actually called newspaper theater and not journalism theater. I think that there's also, like, Chris and I went to Greece this past year, and we went to the Theater of Dionysus, which was the first theater in the world. And to recognize that, like, this was people's church. And yeah. I think it's the Maenads are, like, the priestesses of the Dionysian cult. This concept that there were, like, people whose job it was to feel things, and that was a religious role. I don't know. It's so deep. And so when I see these things like Theater of the Oppressed, so much of our storytelling and our culture today does lean toward entertainment. But
yes,
that was where it started. And it's so neat to me when people are still taking those things out into the world in that different way. It just kind of like gives me shivers.
Right, right. No, I understand. Years ago, there was an amphitheater. I'm sure it's still there, obviously, in Sicily, where Pirandello was born. And a totally different kind of theater, obviously. But they had these actors who would, once a week, I guess, all get together and just impromptu go to the amphitheater on his property and read excerpts from Pirandello works. And there was something, the live reading and the fact that it was different actors and they picked things that called to them. Sometimes one person would do, like an audiobook, an entire scene, doing all the parts. Sometimes they'd all join in. It took on a spiritual quality, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was entertaining, but there was this extra dimension that you felt like this has been happening on this site for way before I was born and will continue way after I'm gone. And there was something very spiritual about that.
Yeah. There's just something about this act of gathering to tell stories and feel things together, being a part of something bigger than just yourself. Like, I think everyone has a connection to that experience.
Yes, yes. Well, also, I think there's a proliferation, at least in New York City, of outdoor theater, I don't know if that happens a lot
yeah.
where you are. But we live in what's now dubbed as, you know, the Lincoln Square. They decided to rename
yeah,
my area.
You guys live in like a nice spot because I see your pictures of going to the park all the time for walks and things.
So yeah. it's incredibly convenient. But they now dub this whole area Lincoln Square to take advantage, I assume, of the prices they charge for everything to make it sound like it's the Lincoln Center area. But it's a small, I mean, it's a New York City apartment. It's small. And two adults, two dogs. We need a little room to spread out.
Exactly. And that, like, I really love being in the city. But the one thing that I don't like is, I need my space. I need my own room. I don't know. I don't know how to exist without my own room. Are you a chaotic
Always.
Whirlwind I'm, as well?
I'm a procrastinator, which isn't helpful. but I operate really well when my back is up against the wall. If I have too much time, I don't get anything done. But if I'm pushed and chaos will ensue if I don't act, all of a sudden I can act on many levels. So, yes.
So you're sort of like the keeper of chaos. Like you're the one that keeps it at bay, but you have to be in the position of having your feet to the fire.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, I wish I didn't. I admire people who can plan things out. And I try every year. I buy a planner. I write down my alleged goals. I put down a little, you know, plan for what I'm going to do. And then it goes to hell in a handbasket.
So, like, it's fun to hear a coach say that, because I think a lot of times coaches feel like they have to tell you to do things in a very structured way and that, like, that's their job. And what is your approach and philosophy when you're talking to people about how to approach their career in
narration? I always say that my approach is like, I'm kind of boots on the ground coaching. I love when people come to me and say, this is my roadblock. This is where I have a problem. And then figuring it out with them. So nothing can be structured because everybody's different and everybody's new. And what works for you to unblock something isn't going to work for somebody else. So I'm more tactical. I just kind of listen, and I think I have this ability to pick what works and what doesn't work. I'm a really good director, and so I can pick up where something rings true and where something is false, or where something is okay, but it can be better. And so I can pick out faults quickly. I wouldn't say there's chaos involved in my coaching, but there's definitely, we're at play now, everything's open, there are no rules, really. And, you know, there are certain rules within the guidelines of, for instance, nonfiction, you know, the way nonfiction works, for instance. But basically, rules are meant to be broken. So that's kind of my coaching. It's like everybody gets a different version of a session. Nobody gets the same version twice. And no two people are going to have the same version. It kind of mutates as I go along.
Yeah. Okay. I really like the idea that when I think in terms of sort of the sliding scale of structure and stability to the other side of things, I don't really think of the other side of things as chaos or undisciplined or any of those. What I think of it is sort of responsiveness. Because if you've got a really rigid structure, that has its place, but it can be lacking in responsiveness to, as you said, the individual details of what someone is presenting right in front of you. And if all you have is a structure to rely on, you're really sort of churning out widgets instead of telling stories.
Right. I mean, it depends on how people learn. Because oftentimes with a coach, it's one coach could have said the same thing that I've said, and I didn't register with that student, but they did, or they didn't register, and I did.
There's a saying in like the yoga lineage that I used to teach, and I'm sure it's part of a lot of different traditions, but it's like, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And
yes.
Sometimes you have to get to a certain point and then a person is going to appear who tells you everything you need to know. But
right.
What it might actually mean is that that person's been there all along telling you stuff, but it's not until you're ready to hear it that you're actually going to hear it from them.
Right. That's kind of like life and relationships. You know, people who, you know, never got married, for instance, and had no wanted nothing to do with it. And then all of a sudden, you hear they're married. They were finally at a point in time where they were receptive, and that person may have always been there, but is only visible to them now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's possible that that's the way coaching works as well. Again, though, I think a lot of it is for people, it's how you learn. You know, some people are visuals, some people are, whether you're left brain or right brain. I remember doing a test once that was supposed to figure out if you're left or right, and that the best way to be is if the two are equal, it's the best way to live life. And I thought, okay, fine. So I took
this have questions about that too, though. Like, best for whom? Because doesn't it depend on what your life is and like who you are and where you are and who the other people around you are? Like, we don't exist in a vacuum. We need some people on all sides of this.
You would think, but supposedly the happiest people are people who are even-minded, that their left side is as strong as their right side. And so I thought, I'm going to end up being like the queen of the right brain. And so I did this test twice, because both times, according to this test, I work equally from left and right side.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, seriously? I just don't believe it, because balancing my checkbook is an art form for me. So I thought, well, this can't possibly be right. But it was nice to think for 1 minute that both my left side and my right side
are in tandem.
We're in Zen together.
You know what? I often feel like both my left side and my right side are very strong, but that they're fighting each other.
Yes, that's how I think.
Not so much that they're in tandem with one another.
Yeah, they're duking it out up there as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at these passages that you've sent.
Okay.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read through very quickly, just like in monotone. And this is solely to get the words out there.
Right.
So let's start with playing Jenna, because I really liked the sound of that. And I already saw like the third sentence, thick, dark blood pooled. That seems very like...
Okay.
Rich in action. So,
okay.
All right. So let's start with playing Jenny here. So Monroe, what does that mean? Is that the character?
That's the character. Yes.
Okay. So there, I'm guessing this is one of those books that has like a dual character thing and different characters do each chapter.
I think there actually might be at least three. When it came out, I believe one narrator is doing it, but I think there's three people involved.
Multiple characters. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. So
this was
Monroe.
One of those that for me was an audition that was cold, really. I didn't have a lot of information. So I created my own scenario.
Gotcha.
So let's see.
Okay. Monroe. It wasn't supposed to go this way. She knew that as she stared down at the mess she had made. The thick, dark blood pooled over the white tile of her kitchen, mixing with the puddle of already cold tea. The body lay in front of her, skull so thick with blood that she could hardly see the wound. Her whole body shook with fear and adrenaline, throat tight. What had she done? That was in italics. What had she done? She would never forget the way the crack had echoed through the empty house or the look on her face as she slammed onto the floor. So I'm guessing this is a female body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The panic was plastered there. Even now, her mouth gaped open, eyes even in death filled with terror. It was over just like that. She was gone. She stepped over a trail of blood as it made its way toward her. The blood was spreading quickly. Everywhere she looked, its sticky darkness was coating the floor. There was just so much. She had to get out of there. She tried to remember, quickly, any place she had touched as she walked through the house, wiping away possible fingerprints as she went. When she was sure she'd wiped away any trace of evidence that she'd ever been there, she darted out the door, running from the house and racing toward her car as fast as her legs would carry her. The lone car still remained in the driveway, and as she ran past it, she expected someone to jump out and stop her. Try to stop her. No one did. The dark of the night swallowed her up, concealing her guilty getaway. She panted, her whole body burning, muscles begging for a break, but she refused to quit moving. She couldn't. She had to get out of there before anyone came back. Her arm was dripping blood, her wound wide open. She tried desperately to keep it covered. She hit the edge of the woods quickly, darting through the trees and disappearing into the darkness. Disappear. It was what she had wanted more than anything else. Well, besides revenge. Oh, man.
Well.
I think, all right, my take on this, just from... reading it through once, there were
right.
so many questions that I had that I really do have to go back through and look at it again to try to make sense of any of them. Because, like, even as I'm going through this first paragraph, some of what I said, I was like, well, it could be this or it could be this. But then the more that I go, I'm like, oh, no, it definitely couldn't be that.
See, without context, we don't really know what's going on. And in the audition, there wasn't a lot of context other than, well, I'll give you this and see if it helps. There's this woman, there is another woman, and there's a husband.
Is the other woman the dead woman?
You got it. And so that was the only information, that the other woman is the dead woman.
Okay.
And so we have a resentful wife who knows this is the other woman and has been apparently in her...
You know, when you say the other woman, you mean like another woman, like relationship-wise?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have...
And she's the dead one?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
How did she get that way?
How did she get that way? Her whole body shook with fear and adrenaline, throat tight. What has she done? So it looks like she got that way by some action of the wife, but it's really unclear whether that was intentional. And I just know from thriller books that so often they will set you up to think that something is someone's fault or that it was on purpose. And then later there's some kind of twist where you realize that they only think it was their fault and that they didn't actually do it or have anything to do with it. So I feel like that's still...
Well, I think the clue, the big clue here is the car. She passed a car in the driveway. The lone car still remained in the driveway. And as she ran past it, she expected someone to jump out and stop her, try to stop her. No one did.
And she's got to be at that lady's house, not at her own house.
Right.
Try to stop her.
There's so many scenarios that could be this story.
Yeah.
And this is your audition, and you have no idea. As we see, there's so many options it could be, but you have to pick an option. So the clue I had was the driveway, or what I used as my clue was the driveway, the car in the driveway. Should I tell you what my interpretation was?
Let's see if that So like what did knowing that lone car still remained in the driveway, what did you use that clue to build?
She was killed, but not by our wife. She was killed by a third party. Could be her husband, for all we know. But there was someone else there. And I think she just came into the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm.
And the dark blood that pulled over the floor and the mess and all that was because maybe this woman tried to revive her. Maybe this woman tried to see if she really was dead.
Mm.
The tea, that was already in a puddle on the floor. So to me, this woman is innocent, but looks guilty and is now trapped. And she knows that her DNA is going to be there because she went over to confront this woman only to find her dead. And that was my take on the situation. And my clue was the car. No one stepped out because I think the murderer is in that car.
Oh, the lone car still remained in the driveway. And as she ran past it, she expected. Okay, so when I read that, I did not piece together that it meant she expected someone to jump out of the car. I was just thinking of her running past the car and assuming that someone somewhere was going to see her and stop her because she felt guilty. Like, I took that totally differently.
Yes. And that's why this is such a brilliant little piece.
Because
that could be. She's afraid that she was thrilled that nobody jumped out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She was like, oh my God, thank God nobody jumped out. Maybe I got away with it. But to me, because I also write, looking at it as a writer, I thought, no, the much more interesting scene here is that.
Totally. Totally.
That someone was in that car. And she just ran. No one came out. It doesn't mean she saw who was in that car or even knew really there was someone in that car. She just didn't want to be seen leaving the scene of a crime. And for all we know, that person is scooched down watching her.
Yeah.
And now is wondering, did she see me? Which sets her up to be another victim.
Ooh, yes, that is far more interesting. And that's really cool that, okay, I love it when people have multiple experiences in multiple different areas and that they can bring that crossover to it, because you are right. Like, looking at that sentence, the way that I interpreted it could be correct, but it's not as interesting. And when you come at it from the writer's mind of every word is chosen for a purpose and
exactly.
Yeah. Like
every
helps.
Line has a payoff when a writer's writing. They don't necessarily go, here's a payoff, but every line leads to something. There are no superfluous lines. And so, I think, to me, this was a woman who witnessed, may have witnessed, we're not sure, who had done it, maybe, but she already got there after the fact, and she knows she's the wronged wife. She knows she's suspect number one, and she's gotten blood and God knows what on her and probably left DNA in the process, and she's getting the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah.
And the murderer doesn't know what she did or didn't see. Okay.
I also, in looking at it and realizing how many questions I have, I'm like, oh man, this is tough because I'm afraid my brain is just going to not like, when I see this, the challenge to me is being specific about the choices that I'm making for each of these questions, because
right.
otherwise it's going to just come out as a big bland mush. And without my own specificity, which is a lot of work in this instance, it might not appear that way from the start, but now, all of these things are questions.
It seems like a pretty straightforward little piece when you read it. And then you're thinking, no, there's more going on here.
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on.
As soon as you start to have to actually put yourself in this position, you realize it's like you don't know what anything is that's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where it gets really interesting for a listener because, as you know, when you narrate, there's always the element of discovery. I always tell people discovery. And by discovery, I mean, you know, if you prep this book, if you got this book, you know what's going on. There's no doubt in your mind what's going on because you know. But you can't let me, the listener, know that you know what's going on.
Yes.
So you have to preface this with all those questions pushing the script, the text forward. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And you know what I've actually done sometimes when I've had a book or two that's had where there's a thing like this at the beginning where you're not supposed to know exactly what's happening.
Right.
And when I have been prepping that or when I've read it, I will actually like go ahead and record it without prepping or reading the rest so that I have something that's that fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And if I need to adjust it or change it, I can. But like once I know, you can't unknow. And so I feel like for me, it's been nice to have that sort of, I'll go ahead and get started on this. And then if I need to fix something, if it doesn't work later on in light of new information, then I can do that. Because for me, that has helped have that sort of freshness to it. Because you can always go fix it afterward if you made the wrong decisions.
I do something similar. I don't record it. But what I do is when I get something like this, I read it through once and then I read it out loud because the way my mind works, I find that my subconscious will pick up on stuff before I consciously realize I've picked up on stuff, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And so I instinctively put the pauses in a place that I didn't think the pause would go. And I go, oh, yeah, there would be a pause there. At which leads me to the realization of what that line means. So I find reading it out loud at least once does kind of that for me. I don't record it, but it changes my perspective as I hear my own voice saying it out loud.
Totally. Let's go ahead and go back to the beginning of this. All right. So like I can just feel that my brain is so tired and my eyes are so tired. And I am really nervous that this is going to come out as just a big puddle of mashed potatoes. Do you have anything in particular that you do when you're having like a draggy day like this and you need to up your energy and you need to like get connected in like a sharp way to whatever it is that you're working on that you just feel kind of fuzzy and you need to like sharpen up?
Actually, the only thing I do, I will sometimes take just a short meditation of some kind, but a guided one so I don't have to work that hard. And that helps me focus. And then I just do like a morning stretch, you know, a sun stretch, and I jump into it. And I feel more centered because even though I'm tired, so it sounds like it's going to have the opposite effect because it's going to mellow me out. It seems to help me because it gets rid of all the monkey mind that's going on when you're tired. And you're thinking 35,000 thoughts at the same time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then you combine that with sort of the physical movement and breathing, and it just sort of opens you up. I like that. I'm going to try that next time. Okay. So,
If it's easier, we can do it what I call one scene, but one paragraph at a time. We can do the first paragraph up to what had she done. and see how that goes. And then we can go on to the next step on the journey.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
I think from it wasn't supposed to go this way to what had she done. Here's the interesting thing about fiction and nonfiction. The first sentence is the declarative sentence of it. It wasn't supposed to go this way. What had she done? You could get rid of everything in the middle.
And you're
it would
right.
still make sense, right? What had she done? You'd still have my interest. Something happened. So to me, that's an entire scene that will segue into the next paragraph. So let's just do that first paragraph up to what had she done.
Okay, cool.
And then we'll see what we get.
Yeah, that was a really good explanation of that. That makes me excited to just do one paragraph instead of wanting to speed forward. All right. Let me just take a second to get in the mind frame of someone who's sitting here with a dead body in front of them. Ugh. It wasn't supposed to go this way. She knew that as she stared down at the mess she had made. The thick, dark blood pooled over the white tile of her kitchen, mixing with the puddle of already cold tea. The body lay in front of her, skull so thick with blood that she could hardly see the wound. Her whole body shook with fear and adrenaline, throat tight. What had she done?
Okay. But what had she done line was lovely. Okay. So it's all fine, but it's all, you have to remember, she's just witnessed a dead body on the floor. We now have decided, I guess, we've mutually decided she didn't commit the murder, but she stumbled into it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. You know what I mean? So I think it would open up a little bit more with, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. She went there to confront this woman about her affair with her husband. And what did she find but her enemy, who she's probably wished dead 8 million times, has actually, that wish has been fulfilled. The woman's dead. So is it possible there'd be a little more speed, let's say, in the tone, and as opposed to a softness? You have a lovely softness. I think there'd be a little more, it wasn't supposed to go this way. You know, like she's talking to herself kind of thing. She knew that as she stared down at the mess she had made. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That kind of a thing? Yeah. Let's try it with a little, there's a little more. Because after that, she has other aspects she's got to deal with. But right now, she has just literally stumbled into a murder scene. And in her head, it's going, not only, oh, my God, this woman's dead. But it's, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. I'm going to look, who are they going to think did this? They're going to think I did it. There's a little more at stake. Who are we talking about? What had she done? Anyway, let's start back to it. Wasn't supposed to go this way.
Okay. It wasn't supposed to go this way. She knew that as she stared down at the mess she had made. The thick, dark blood pooled over the white tile of her kitchen, mixing with the puddle of already cold tea. The body lay in front of her, skull so thick with blood that she could hardly see the wound. Her whole body shook with fear and adrenaline, throat tight. What had she done?
Okay. Does it feel any different to
you? Oh, that definitely felt different. And it felt more like, if I were listening to that, I feel like I would be pulled in more and more engaged.
Yes.
The first one was like, you kind of had to want to be drawn into it. And this one was just like, I think it would be easier for the listener to be like, here we are right at the top. There's something has happened.
Yes. The opening sentence to me in every, especially the start of a chapter, is never just something to lead us into a story. It's always the sentence. So for me, as a reader and as a listener, you got to grab me immediately. There's too many books, too little time. So I always feel like the first paragraph, the first scene, is like you just walked on stage. This is your first opening moment. The audience is meeting you for the first time.
Wow. That's a great way to think of that.
But yeah, you know, publishers have said at any time we have like the Splendiferous workshop or anything like that, they've all said, you've got to grab me with a demo from the get-go. If it doesn't grab me immediately, I don't care if it gets better. So yeah, that's why this particular scene seems like it's, oh, it's just a setup for, you know, we're getting to this point. No, it's not. It's not. And like I said, the what had she done, you can infuse it with whatever you want. I mean, I don't know who the she is. I don't know if she is our unfortunate victim. In other words, what had she done to get herself lying dead in a pool of blood? Or what had I, me, she done? Because I'm, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's so well written psychologically because there are so many interpretations. This is, what is this, a page and a half, I think, all told?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not much here. Right? And there's so much here.
And there's so much going on in a page and a half.
So do you want to do the next paragraph
now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Let's do the next. So, okay. So this is almost a change in tone because what had she done? Now you've set us up, but you can't stay at that, you know, heightened the entire time because if everything's important, nothing's important. So now she would never forget the way the crack had echoed through the empty house or the look on her face as she slammed onto the door. Who got slammed onto the door? Who got cracked? I mean, is this... we don't know. I don't know. Do you know? but this is now a different thing. There is a question to it. We don't know who she's talking about. It could be whoever was there was still in the house. And she heard a crack echo, and then someone blindsided her, you know, took her by the back and threw her up against the wall so they couldn't see her, and they flew out the porch door. Who knows?
Yeah. Can I maybe try to take this through the end of the third paragraph instead of just the second one?
Yes. Okay, if you feel better finishing the whole thing, that's fine too.
I think let's stop at the end of this third paragraph and then we'll look at this big next paragraph on the next page before we dive into it.
Okay.
She would never forget the way the crack had echoed through the empty house or the look on her face as she slammed onto the floor. The panic was plastered there, even now. Her mouth gaped open, eyes, even in death, filled with terror. It was over. Just like that. She was gone. She stepped over a trail of blood as it made its way toward her. The blood was spreading quickly. Everywhere she looked, its sticky darkness was coating the floor. There was just so much. She had to get out of there. She tried to remember, quickly, any place she had touched as she walked through the house, wiping away possible fingerprints as she went.
Hey, I thought that was pretty good. You instinctively did the right changes. The panic was plastered there, mouth gaped open, filled with terror. It was over, just like that. And you did it. That's what you did. It was over. That's another. That was almost another complete scene to us. It was over, just like that. A human life snuffed out, gone in seconds. She was gone. Now the next thing, reality. I gotta get the heck out of here. She stepped over a trail of blood as it made its way toward her. The blood was spreading quickly. I don't even know if you realized it. You instinctively picked up your pace.
Yeah, because the quickly, I think that did it.
I mean, everywhere she looked, its sticky darkness was coating the floor. You instinctively, because you're getting more of a whatever decisions you're making about what's going on in the scene are now kind of taking hold in your psyche. And so you instinctively made the right pauses in the right places. Because those are completely the similar and different thoughts, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I find with the, like, when shorter sentences are chunked together like that, there's something that happens rhythmically that I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's sort of like... they're shorter than all of the sentences around them, but the fact that they're all right there next to each other, it's kind of what you're saying. It's like there's not as much in them, but each of them individually has to be important.
Yes, because they're to the point and they're not filled with color. Like, you know, she stepped over a trail of blood as it made its way toward her. The blood was spreading quickly. We just had that. It was simple. It was over. Just like that. She was gone. It's three distinct beats that lead to the same thing. But it says a lot in those short sentences.
Okay, So we've gotten through paragraph one, paragraph two, paragraph three. Now here's this chunker of a fourth paragraph.
Right.
I wonder if I should just try to tackle this and see where it goes, or do we want to like break it down at all first?
I'd say just tackle it and see where it goes, and then we can pull it apart if we have to.
Okay. When she was sure she'd wiped away any trace of evidence that she'd ever been there, she darted out the door, running from the house and racing toward her car. Oh, her car is there.
Yes, her car is there because she came for a visit.
And then the lone car still remained in the driveway.
Or wherever this woman lives.
Yeah, okay.
See, I think that's another red herring that the author threw in, right? Her car could be parked on the curb outside the front of the house.
Yes.
And the other car is in the driveway.
Now, I don't completely understand, though. Well, it says she hit the edge of the woods quickly. Maybe she's running. Maybe her car's parked on the other side of the woods.
That's possible, too. And here's another possible scenario. Maybe she went there very surreptitiously. Maybe she was going to beat the heck out of this woman or kill her. We don't
know.
So she could have parked in the woods where the car was hidden and gone in. I mean, how many murder movies have you seen that open up that way? That they are there to kill somebody and they go in, the person's already dead. I saw something last week, actually, that was the gimmick. They were destined. They went there. They had a gun. They broke in through the patio. The body was already dead on the other side of the kitchen island, bleeding out. And they realized, I got to get the heck out of here. So she does run to the woods. So that gives you another character quirk. Maybe she was there to kill this person.
Maybe.
She was there to do something if she had to surreptitiously hide her car.
Yeah, like whatever it was, if I'm thinking that her car is on the other side of these woods or is in the woods, there's some other layer to that there, too.
Yeah.
And also, it does even say right at the end here, well, she wanted revenge.
Yeah.
So that's got to be part of it. All right, let me try this again. When she was sure she'd wiped away any trace of evidence that she'd ever been there, she darted out the door, running from the house and racing toward her car as fast as her legs would carry her. A lone car still remained in the driveway, and as she ran past it, she expected someone to jump out and stop her, try to stop her. No one did. The dark of the night swallowed her up, concealing her guilty getaway. She panted, her whole body burning, muscles begging for a break, but she refused to quit moving. She couldn't. She had to get out of there before anyone came back. Her arm was dripping blood, her wound wide open. She tried desperately to keep it covered. She hit the edge of the woods quickly, darting through the trees and disappearing into the darkness. Disappear. It was what she had wanted more than anything else. Well, besides revenge.
I love this scene.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, dun, 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 dun.
How was that? Did that read? Did that, was the urgency like?
That was pretty good. The only thing, and these are little techie note, director notes.
Yeah.
When she was sure she'd wiped away any trace of evidence, as fast as her legs would carry her. That's kind of the end of that. The end of that panic. That particular, and there's more panic of a different kind, but the panic that her
panic A is wrapping up. Panic B is beginning.
Yes. And panic B is now the lone, is a new thing because now we know there's a lone car.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I'm seeing like an obstacle course almost here. It's like the fingerprints, then the getting out the door.
Check. Wipe
then
away the blood.
The lone
check.
Car. Then the edge of the woods. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it kind of ends. The initial panic ends with she got out of there as fast as her, you know, little legs would carry her. You can see cartoon character, you know, where the feet are going a mile a minute. Blah, feet don't fail me now. Boom, she's gone. And then all of a sudden, it's a new. We're giving people new information. There's a lone car in the driveway. So the lone car still remained in the driveway. It's a new beat. And as she ran past it, she expected someone to jump out and stop her, try to stop her. No one did. So it's a new beginning to a new scene. And then after that, no one did. Okay. But is it because no one was in that car, or is it because the killer had gone out the other way after he threw her against the wall or whatever? Because she is injured. She talks about the injury. And then is hiding in that car. Who the hell knows? I mean, it's easy to assume that car belongs to the woman who lived in the house. And it could. Maybe it does. But the killer could still be in that car. We don't know who owns that car and why it's there.
Yeah. You and know, I'm almost seeing her like... The pacing of her actual physical body moving is like she's stock still at the start. And then she is slowly kind of like coming to her senses and moving through the house to try to wipe things down. And then all of a sudden, boom, she's out the door. She's running. And I'm almost seeing like when she runs past the car, it's like, did they stop her? No, they didn't stop her. She's swallowed up by the night. But it's almost like she turns to look over her shoulder, or she turns in a circle as she's continuing to run. Like there's a moment of hesitation or something there. And then she hits the woods and then it like fades to black.
Yes, it is. It's like a scene. If you think of it as a scene in a movie, it's cinematic. It really is. You can see all this happening bit by bit. And it's kind of monkey mind again, with so many thoughts going on at once. But she reins in the left side for a second there to go, ah, DNA, wipe up the blood. La, la, la. Got to get out of here. Fingerprints. So she's now in logical mode. Oh, I got to clean all this up. I got to, you know. That.
Joanna, I wonder if she's happy. Her left and right brain are working together very well.
They're working together simultaneously. She must be thrilled. So now the logic pops in. So you can see there's so many things going on. It's kind of like panic and then the logic. But after the logic wears off, she's in fight or flight mode, right? The lone car still remained. She's got to get out of there now. So it's kind of, okay, pull it together, little zen, take a breath, clean it up, clean everything up, stay calm enough to make sure you didn't leave any evidence, and I'll get the hell out of there. You know what I mean? So there's so many different things going on with this person.
Oof, it's a lot. It's very exciting.
It is. In fact, I kept making a note to pick up the book when it came out, and I'm reminding myself, I got to know what the hell happened. So there's a logic going on while she's wiping things away, but the new beat is fight or flight. The lone car still remained in the driveway. She ran past it. She expected someone to jump out and stop her, try to stop her. No one did. You know what I mean? It's like, just try. I mean, and what does that try to stop her mean? Like, oh, dear God, it would take you and, you know, King Kong to stop me at this point because I'm on adrenaline and I'm on a tear.
So, yeah, I was also wondering about that try to stop her. Like, there was something about that to me when you mentioned for the first time that there was a person in that car. Like, I initially had thought that it was the try to stop her, like she's running so hard. But then I wondered if it was like, is there a reason why she would expect them to
try to stop her?
Yeah. I don't know.
Because even in her mind, if she's not the killer, but someone blindsided her because she was injured, and whoever that is no longer in the house, which obviously she knew they weren't, or she wouldn't be standing around. If she thought a murderer was standing in the next room, she wouldn't be clearing away her DNA and all that other stuff. She'd get the hell out because she'd be afraid they're going to get me. I'm next, you know, I'm a witness, if nothing else. So, you know, there's probably an undercurrent of the way, because the way our minds work, we absorb stuff subconsciously before we consciously understand it. All the time. That's how somebody throws something at you and you don't necessarily know somebody just threw something, but you sometimes instinctively put your hand up and catch it. Does that ever happen to you? Johnny does that with me. He thinks I have these great reflexes, so he likes to tease me. And what he'll do is he'll roll up a piece of paper and talk to me and all of a sudden flip it at me. It has nothing to do with anything and I'll catch it. And he'll go, aha, see, you have great, you should be playing softball. And I'm like, uh-huh. So we all have that ability. It's like subconsciously something picked up. There is something hurtling towards you, even if it's a benign piece of paper. Catch it. Stop it. So there's probably a part of her that's going, well, yeah, they left the building I was in, but could they be in the car?
Yeah. Ooh, so many questions. But I think I'm most comfortable with that one being kind of what we talked about, that like it's a car that like subconsciously as she's running past it, she thinks like somebody's like the killer might be in this car and they might jump out and try and get me. I feel like that makes the most sense. my sincere hope is that I'm actually able to integrate what we've talked about and that it doesn't end up just being sort of a bland version of everything all over again.
This is what I think. I think once someone points something out, your brain will agree with it and it can't help but come out in the reading.
I also, like, there is such a fine line between recording ourselves and going back and listening and being sure that we did it the way that we wanted, because you literally cannot do that with the whole book. It's too big a piece of work to be able to go back and listen to the whole thing again.
Yes.
So and we do have to kind of find that balance of I make my choices and then I live with them.
I have to live with them. Because you could do this till the cows come home. What matters is you make a choice and you go with it and you're consistent with it and honest to it. Neither one of us ultimately knows what's going on in this scene.
Yeah.
And unless I go out and get the book, I'll never know.
But we've come up with a scenario that really works.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to try and put it all together. Here we go. It wasn't supposed to go this way. She knew that as she stared down at the mess she had made. The thick, dark blood pooled over the white tile of her kitchen, mixing with the puddle of already cold tea. The body lay in front of her, skull so thick with blood that she could hardly see the wound. Her whole body shook with fear and adrenaline, throat tight. What had she done? She would never forget the way the crack had echoed through the empty house, or the look on her face as she slammed onto the floor. The panic was plastered there, even now. Her mouth gaped open, eyes, even in death, filled with terror. It was over. Just like that. She was gone. She stepped over a trail of blood as it made its way toward her. The blood was spreading, quickly. Everywhere she looked, its sticky darkness was coating the floor. There was just so much. She had to get out of there. She tried to remember, quickly, any place she had touched as she walked through the house, wiping away possible fingerprints as she went. When she was sure she'd wiped away any trace of evidence that she'd ever been there, she darted out the door, running from the house and racing toward her car as fast as her legs would carry her. The lone car still remained in the driveway, and as she ran past it, she expected someone to jump out and stop her, try to stop her. No one did. The dark of the night swallowed her up, concealing her guilty getaway. She panted, her whole body burning, muscles begging for a break, but she refused to quit moving. She couldn't. She had to get out of there before anyone came back. Her arm was dripping blood, her wound wide open. She tried desperately to keep it covered. She hit the edge of the woods quickly, darting through the trees and disappearing into the darkness. Disappear. It was what she had wanted more than anything else. Well, besides revenge.
Brava. That was great. How'd that feel to you?
I felt very tense.
Well, it's a tense scene.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever have that where, like, you finish a chapter and you're like, oh, man, I need a massage. Like,
or,
I can't
or
do
you
this.
Read something that's so depressing and you walk out and go, I feel blue. That just means you invested yourself. You invested emotionally, you invested logically, psychologically, physically, you're invested. You did. You sped up, your whole tone changed. You slowed down in the right spots, you picked up at the right, which made it so interesting. Mm. But how did it feel to you reading it?
I mean, I felt very in the moment. I think that's why I felt so tense. I was imagining, like you said, seeing the movie of it and her pace of motion and kind of like we said, she was stock still at the beginning, kind of frozen with fear and then slowly gathering her wits about her, recognizing that she needs to wipe these things off and then boom, out the door, running, spinning around with the car. Like, what is that? And then hitting the edge of the woods and then, oh, almost like the same sensation as if she tripped, but not tripped. It's just like the wound on her arm, like a physical thing slowing her down. And then just the fade to black. Like, we don't know what happened to her after that. It just, she disappears.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. This particular author, as far as I'm concerned, I want to know what else she's written. I want to look it up. I have to know because it's so psychologically complex. And it's literally, like I said, it's a page and a half.
I would love to, now that we've had a chance to work through this, let me ask you this one last question.
Okie dokie.
If you were going on the Great American Road Trip, what would be the song playing on the radio?
Oh, my God. That's tough. I don't know what I would pick. I think I would pick something retro, for one thing. Something that was big when road trips were a thing. Like, you know, Bye Bye, Miss American Pie. I think that's what I would pick. Something like that. It's so retro, but it's so perfect of that era and the politics and all that stuff.
American Pie is one of my favorite songs. It's nice how special music can bring us back to those moments like that.
Yeah.
And all right, well, Joanna,
retro music really kind of resonates with me, so.
Yeah, is that your vibe? Yeah. It has been a joy to get to catch up with you a little
bit.
There are so many more questions that I have for you, but I think I've told you this already. If not, you're hearing it now. Maybe I told Johnny. I want you all to be one of the in-depth Keystone episodes at some point. And we can arrange a day to do that. But you all are such a power couple in the world of narration.
Oh, dear God. People say that to us, but look at each other and go, what?
You totally are, though. And it's I think it's because of the retreats, because you've created this space
for people
to become like their best selves in this industry. Yeah. And you and Johnny have been like supporters of the Nomad Narrator from day one. And, you know, like, I want to talk to Johnny, too, at some point, but he's always kind of the one of the two of you that's like out in front of everyone. And, but you have worked so hard behind the scenes on all of this. And I wanted to be sure that people got to know you a little bit better. It's a disservice to others if they don't get to know who you are and what you have to offer. So I wanted to have you as one of the coaches that I got to talk to first. And I would love to, in the future, get a chance to speak with both of you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. We'd be honored. We'd be thrilled.
I think it'd be really fun. So we'll arrange that at some point. It's been awesome to get to catch up with you and get to know you a little bit better. Thank you so much for giving your time to do this.
Sure.
So I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
I always love getting to talk with Joanna. Here are a few takeaways from this episode. Number one, storytelling is a spiritual experience. Some of the most meaningful experiences we have come from getting to feel things together with other people as we bear witness to stories. Number two, you don't have to do everything perfectly to be great at what you do. Three, rules are made to be broken. Number four, structure versus responsiveness. If all you have is structure from a coach, they might not be the best fit for you. So you also want to look for someone that brings a certain element of responsiveness to their coaching. Number five, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Are you ready to hear what you need to learn? Number six, left brain, right brain, or both. Finding a balance between your creative and logical sides can serve you really well. Number seven, start where you start. If your character has just found a body, maybe don't start in a soft place. Get in touch with the emotional landscape of the first few sentences and immediately bring that to life. Number eight, choose the most interesting interpretation possible. You want to mine your text, not just for choices that make sense, but that maximize what's interesting in the story for the audience. Number nine, commit to your choices. You don't have to know exactly what's going on, and you won't even always be able to, so you have to make decisions that fill in the gaps, commit to those choices with honesty and consistency, and run with it. And number 10, you can learn more about Joanna's coaching offerings and reach out to her via the contact form on her website at joannaperrin.com. That's joannaperrin.com. Thank you so much for listening. The Nomad Narrator is created, hosted, and produced by me, Emily Pike Stewart, for Imperium Productions, expanding the universe of storytelling. Thank you, as always, to our house band, Jake and Mr. Stewart, for our intro-outro music, to Joanna for taking the time to chat with us today, and to all of you for listening. If you like what you hear, please share this episode with a friend and take the time to go to our show page on Apple or Spotify to leave 5 stars if you're so inclined, or a review in the iTunes app. We've got an extra treat coming up with something a little new for our next episode, so stay tuned because you don't want to miss it. And in the meantime, I hope you have a very happy St. Patrick's Day, and I'll see you on down the road.